and welcome to the Mothers Unleashed LA podcast. I'm your host, screenwriter by day, mom of three by early morning, afternoon, and evening, and all day on the weekends, Tamar Finekind. Mothers Unleashed podcast is based off of the live Mothers Unleashed LA events, where four times a year we gather four moms who share stories weighing on their hearts. For a whole month, we workshop the stories together as a group, and then we share the stories live in front of an audience. This episode, we'll be hearing from my good friend, Devin Dionne. A former dancer, Devin is a gyrotonics instructor and personal trainer. Whether she's doing endless crafts and dance parties with her kids, encouraging her friends to live their best lives, or volunteering in the community, Devin always leads from the heart. In this episode, Devin and I talk candidly about a ton of stuff, including overpacking that metaphorical knapsack, doing too much, and trying not to pass down anxious habits to our children, and often failing at that. We talk about parenting techniques and being overwhelmed by all of it. There are a few curse words, but generally it's pretty tame and more thoughtful about parenthood in general. Devin is my very good friend, as I said, and she's a total sweetheart, and it turns out she's pretty smart and talented. Afterwards, we're going to play Devin's live story, so once again, I hope you stick around. And as always, be sure to like, review, subscribe, do whatever you do with podcasts, and tell your friends. We're building a community, and this is something special, so enjoy. Hi, Devin.
Hi, Tamar.
Okay, so I'm here with Devin, my very, very good friend. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. I had half of a can of Truly tequila soda.
I'm drinking First Street purified drinking water.
Okay, so we're sitting at a table. It's Devin, me, and two friends, Maya and Unique. And I bring up that I want to restart this storytelling workshop for moms. And Devin says,
let's do it. Let's do it. Yes, we're in. Come on. And I don't think I really thought about it when I said it. But I was like, yeah, I want to support you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we... And you were like, great. And I was like, oh no, what did I get myself into? I am not a writer.
Yeah, you were a little lovingly overwhelmed, I would say. It was kind of amazing. But you did it. And so first of all, let's talk about why you were like what type of person you are, why you were like, yes, let's do it. Who are you, Devin, as a person?
I'm a yes person. I need to learn the word no. I also love my friends, and when they do something creative, especially as moms, I feel like, yeah. Yes, let's get back to who we are from previously and bring that back into our lives.
Yes. I was like, okay, guys, we're doing this Mothers Unleashed thing. And like Unique and Maya were a little hesitant, but they did it. And we're sitting in the first meeting, and I think everyone was a little shocked to be realizing, because it's essentially you sit down and you read your story, or you have bullet points and you share your thoughts, and it suddenly is like really soul bearing accidentally.
Yeah, it's real. Yeah. It's for real. I think my experience of that when we were all here for the first time, and I was like, oh gosh, what am I doing? My story's terrible. I don't know how to write. This is going to be stupid. Why did I say yes to this? Mm. Like, you know, but I'm like, I'm going to go support Tamar. That's how I felt. And after, as we did this experience, first of all, you were amazing. And I know you think like the bearing of this, it's for reals, but you're also just a really good artist, and you really know writing and how to tell a story well. Mm. And I mean, you would be like, I think you should do this and move this part over here and then make this part. And I think you're true. Like you're really trying to say is this, this, and this. And I'm like, oh yeah. And I think one week I lost the notes and I was like, Tamar, do you have notes that you said to
and
me?
And I did.
And you did.
I used to be a tutor, yeah. So I take notes.
But I think all of a sudden you could start to realize like, oh, my story is worth telling.
Yes.
We all are. And when I'm hearing my friends tell stories that were, you know, because we were friends, all of us in this particular group. But they were like new friends.
Right.
It was like, oh, wow, these are beautiful human beings.
Exactly.
And I want to know more about them. So it was just this beautiful, artistic, collaborative, connecting place that I hadn't been in a long time. And you just make it safe for everyone. Which is nice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What I am always shocked by is
this is going to sound so silly to be shocked by this, but I'm always shocked by how deep and human all of us are, which is like, duh, of course. But, you know, LA gets a bad rap and moms get a bad rap and it's just, you know, we're all superficial, we're this, we're just flighty, flaky, and we, everyone has so much going on underneath, and especially moms who just don't get a break to sit with their thoughts. Mm-mm. And I loved when you were like, everyone has a story to tell. Like, that's my thesis. Like, that's it.
Yeah. And multiple stories. I mean, yeah. That's why you can sit and talk to your friends for hours and hours and hours, and why we didn't get started for another hour. Because we were like, we're going to start at 8 o'clock on the dot. And then,
Right. I want you to come back and tell another story.
Yeah.
Exactly. Come back. Okay. So let's get a little bit into your background, as much as you want to share about why. So you said you're a yes person. You are a doer. You are a participator. You are a cheerleader.
Yes.
And like, what has that looked like throughout your life? Because that's touched on in your story.
Yeah. I mean, I come from kind of a little bit of a broken family, right? Divorced parents, alcoholic dad, kind of not so present mom at moments. So I'm a pleaser.
Mm.
Yeah. I want to make everybody okay. You're going to be okay. I want to make sure of it. And that's actually gotten me very far in life, right? Yeah. It's connected me to a lot of people. I'm also, was also very open. So the doing, I had to stay busy, right? It was my survival as a kid. If I stayed busy, I was a dancer. I was a rhythmic gymnast. I played the violin. I was top of my class. Like, I did show choir, jazz hands. Yeah. I had to fill my life because I didn't feel grounded in myself. So I filled my life. So my dad used to jokingly say, I don't know how you do it. You stuff 10 pounds of shit into that 5-pound bag. And that is the theme of my life. Yes. So that's what I wrote my piece about, because it was great when I was a kid. Not so great as a mom.
Yeah. It's literal burnout.
Yeah.
Results in literal burnout. And when you're talking, well, first of all, I want to say, like, you do a lot. You go. You're on a million, you know, volunteer boards at the school, and you run a business, and you got your two kids and all of that. And you're not just like, you got the two kids. I've never seen a mom more involved with activities with her kids. Like, you are, like, I mean, when we first started going over to your house and Lana was just 2 years old, you would be like, dancing with the kids? And I was like, listen, I am here for a break. The kids are to go play, go away. But you're like, entertaining them. And so you're going. And then you get migraines, right?
Debilitating. Yeah. Debilitating migraines. Yeah.
And I don't know the science behind it, the medicine behind it, but I don't know if it's related, but it does seem like it just is your body saying, like, stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Is it related? Yes. And maybe, you know, it's like everything's an indirect, it's the combination of all the things, right? Mm-hmm. It is the 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. It's, you know, if I don't get enough sleep, because I'm doing too many things, it's, stressed out, you know, something's not going right in work and this. And then as moms, we just take it all in our head and like, what is happening? It's not taking the time to eat well or to even eat lunch sometimes.
Which is ironic, because that is your livelihood.
That's my profession. Yeah. But, you know, I can do really good on a cereal bar. I can go fast. Give me a little sugar and some black tea midday. I'm good for another 5 hours, you know, till dinner. So, So when I slow down and take care of myself, the migraines are significantly less. Makes sense.
But, you know, I'm just shocked, not shocked, taking all this in and really thinking, like, people don't see that side. You know, they just see the Devin who goes and does and says yes and is so friendly. You know everyone's name. You know everyone's name. At the preschool, you'd be like, oh, that's John and his kid, Penelope. And I'd be like, I don't know. You're like, oh, well, you got to say hi to people. I'm like, I'm dropping them off at 8 o'clock in the morning. Like, what are you talking about?
I don't know. It's true. It's a gift and a curse.
You organize the play groups. I mean, it was great. And I have to say, when your kids aged out and you left the preschool, it was, I felt the difference. I mean, it's the preschool is fine, but I felt it. I was like, oh, there's a big gaping, you know, excitement hole.
I do genuinely love what I like, everything I do. I think that's part of it. It's really like, ooh, shiny new object. And I really enjoy it, every shiny new object. So that is a positive side of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I take on something, I really want to do it well.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't also, want to let people down.
It's like a very feminine thing. And I wonder if it's labeled feminine to be like happy and participating and community organizing and building in that way. Do you ever feel like pushback or just like taken advantage of in some way by, I don't know, men, women? Like, does that ever?
Yes. A lot. I mean, you know, this difference of like somebody else's problems is more important than yours. Mm-hmm. And that is something, you know, like I don't agree with. We all can have
I don't know,
problems that exist and work together to solve them together.
I don't know if it's like my personal like bias because I am friends with people who are similar to me. And so I see that like women and moms are just taken for granted and taken advantage of, or if it's a whole systemic thing where what you're describing is your behavior has been to do a ton of mental work, unseen labor, and just to be expected to like take it.
Yeah.
And be quiet about it.
And be happy.
And I'm like, is that really all women are getting that? Or is it just the people that I'm associating with because you associate with people like yourself?
I do think that if women... when women in these roles speak up, they're labeled a bitch.
Yeah.
I remember talking to a client of mine who was a very tiny, physically, like, teeny woman. She probably was 90 pounds and a high-powered lawyer. Mm. And she said, you know, she'll never make top-tier partner because every year, despite her bringing in more than any other partner in that firm, she brings in more money every year, there's a constant complaint that... she's a bitch.
Yeah.
And that's what they call her.
Yeah.
And so
she doesn't smile enough.
Yeah. She's not nice enough.
Mm.
And yet she said, and that she's too aggressive. Mm-hmm. And she said, when would a man in a top lawyer position be labeled as too aggressive? That is a positive thing for men. But for me, I'm a bitch.
Yeah.
So
it's so, I mean, I was socialized, you can say whatever you want, to be nice, to care about other people's feelings above my own at times, most times I should say. And I truly feel these things in my core, but then there's this little voice in my head that's like, this is just because this is how you feel. You're being dramatic, you know, this isn't true for all women. Even though I'm a huge feminist, and so it's hard.
I do think men are coming along. I was actually listening to a podcast. What's that? The thing of the CEO.
There's no other podcast other than this podcast.
I don't know, Diaries of the CEO, I think it's called. Okay, does that sound right? Yeah. Something like that?
Yeah, that does sound right.
And they were talking about men, because I also have a son, right? Yeah. So I think a lot about this. And I watched the difference of my kids in school and what my son is supposed to do as a boy at 5 years old. And like, he can't do it. He needs to be running and jumping off things. And if like that is his nature right now, and it is so hard to see him get constantly in trouble in TK for literally dancing during story time, please tell your son to be more respectful of his fellow students. And I'm like, no, please let him run outside until he's exhausted and come back and sit down for story time. It's 11 o'clock. He needs to run, you know, like, but as we get, what's happening now is like women, because we're making more as much money or more sometimes than men. and we have much more equal jobs. The new currency they're talking about is social emotional intelligence for men. Mm-hmm. And yet what's interesting is that when the male is expressing themselves in that way, the statistics show that the females then are like too scared. It makes them uncomfortable. They're not strong. And so they leave the relationship. So I want to say that there's two sides of this.
Can I be honest? You know?
Yeah.
I do not feel 100% comfortable seeing men cry. Mm. Isn't that wild? And I'm fairly progressive, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the way I was raised. And I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric doesn't cry. No, I try to get Rob to cry, but I think I've seen him cry in 25 years we've been together, maybe 5 times.
Yeah, the only time Eric cried was at Coco, the movie.
What was it that he connected to on that made him so upset? I love this.
It's
without getting too personal,
a father-son connection, just like losing your father. Just he has a deep fear of that, like, you know, because that's what Coco is, right?
And that's one of the 5 times I've seen my husband cry when he lost his father.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, not this is a tangent. I'm pretty sure Eric's going to go ultra orthodox when his parents die, and we'll have to talk about it. You know, anyway, anywho, the reason we're talking about these things is because this is what your piece was more or less about, was about stuffing that bag too full, doing too much. And I guess we didn't talk about it in the piece and we didn't talk about it in a workshop together, but like the repercussions of that in your daily life beyond how you burn out, which is expected. I think maybe the repercussions are also like, you get taken advantage of.
Sure. I mean, that's one of them. I'm trying to think even in this instance, just being a mom, right?
Yeah.
As is my first priority, my first love right now, and having a studio. My studio is surviving. It's not a thriving business because my focus isn't there. Can't be. My focus is I drop my kids off in the morning, them in the morning, them at night. Once I'm home with my kids, like studio business goes away in my mind. So it's surviving. It's doing well. You know, and then I think the other, you know, I thought you were going to say before you were talking about being taken advantage of. And yeah, I mean, I think as a younger person, for sure, I was. I think I've learned a lot of strength.
Mm-hmm.
Being 44 now, like I'm going to learn more, right?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say my children, it was going to affect my children, which it does.
Well, I was going to then get to that, is like how these skills translate to being a mom and what you're imparting onto your kids.
Yeah. And there are times where I see that, you know, I talk a lot in therapy about like these thoughts. It feels like a tornado in my head, right? Like things are spinning so fast and I feel like that's where the migraines start, right? It's just like going. And then that's how my life is. That's how my breath is. That's how my physical body is to my kids. And then I see it in them, you know? And I do so much, like my husband's a doer too. So we don't have anybody in my house that's like, hey, let's relax and watch a TV show together.
He's always working and outside and doing whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, because we also have apartments too. Mm-hmm. Like we both have businesses, have their kids.
But also like he's apartments. Just fixing up cars. Like he's just always active.
Having something to do. And so I think I've had to really learn how to slow down for them. But it causes, it's anxiety for me, right? Is like the base of it for my husband too. And I'm seeing it start in my kids, which is devastating and scary. And so, you know, sadly, I'm kind of learning through that. I mean, I guess it's a positive thing. I shouldn't say sadly, but I'm saying sadly in the sense that I wish I had that under control before I had kids, that I wasn't going to pass something on to them. But,
It's a cruel joke that you don't know what you don't have under control until you're confronted with it by your own kids who are just a mirror of you.
Yes. Yeah. And my therapist calls it our itty bitty shitty committee. Like, I was working on that this week because I'm also able now more to see when these things are happening and go, oh man, I'm doing this again. I'm like out of integrity again. And then, but my itty bitty shitty committee is so hard on me that it's like, oh, you're so stupid. Oh, you know, what are you doing? You think you have a handle on your life. You don't know what you're doing. Go back to bed. I'm giving you a migraine. Mm. You deserve that. You shouldn't be able to, you know, function for a day. You know, like that's what goes on in my head. It's like, it's not nice.
We are very similar. We come at it from different points of views. Mm-hmm. I come at it from like the perfectionist point of view. And then I get embarrassed for anybody to know that I did anything remotely not perfect. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Anywho. But yeah, not passing that on to your kids is difficult. Yeah. But what is going to make them interesting if they're not slightly messed up? Right? Like
good point.
So the funny good point. Thing
boring.
Is I was thinking about this yesterday and I'm like, you know, our parents didn't even consider mental health like at all. It was like bite your cheek, don't let them see you cry. It was, oh, you're not sad, you're okay, you're fine. Don't cry in my face. All of these wonderful life skills. And so you know, now we've swung this pendulum. You know, there's gentle parenting, there's all this, and some people have gone too far. We're having to kind of figure it out. But like, yes, our feelings need to be realized, but like, no human is, like, there's a comedian who was like, I'm not starting therapy because there is no fixing this. He's like, once you, and I wish I could remember the comedian's name. He's like, once you, there's no fixing this. Like, once you start therapy, like, you're never going to stop. There is just no fixing this. And it's actually true. Like, we are just, every human is just layers of psyche and id and ego or whatever. And like, I don't know. We got to give them something, you know, something to be in therapy about.
Well, I always joke that I do not have a college thing set up, but I'm like, I want to start a bank account, but not for college.
For therapy.
Because I feel like that's going to be much more beneficial at that time.
Well, if the United States continues on the track it does and the things stay the same way, then they can just have a job, go to college, have a job that pays their health insurance and gives them therapy.
I could do that too, yeah. But I think it's more important than college at this point. Change their life.
I don't disagree. Okay. Okay, so the other thing that I wanted to talk about was you are an open person. You've talked about therapy. You come from a dance background. You're artistic. How was it sitting down and writing your story out? Like, even though you've done so much inner personal work, like inner work on yourself, like, was it different?
Yeah, because my interpersonal work is between me and my therapist, my close friends and my husband, right? So I think writing a story too and trying to like create beginning, middle and end of my life or of this topic. I remember writing it and, you know, I was like, what am I going to write about? And then once I sat down, it was like 2.5 hours of just like writing and working on it and trying to think of the right word and crying and going, this is stupid. What am I even writing about? You know, like it was like all of this stuff. And so that, but then coming here and sharing it, which I was like, oh, here, itty bitty shitty committee, here it is. It's just not very good.
It was beautiful.
And then you were like, wow, that was really good. I was like, really? Okay.
Actually, I distinctly remember going, Devin could do all these things. I didn't know she could also write.
Well, thank you.
You're a very good writer.
It was
not
really
that
fun.
That
really
matters in this.
It.
It's not about the performance. It's not about the talent.
No, but it was, I think I enjoyed the process a lot, and it was very cathartic. And it also, like, it made me think about, especially this 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, where it came from and how that has been a theme in my life since I was little. My dad said it, and I think big part of my story was like, my dad recognized it, but didn't know how to help me with it.
Yeah.
And it became a joke, something to laugh about, when actually it was a serious issue that I've struggled with my entire life, and is now is physically causing me migraines, right? So kind of the realization of, like, you know, where he was kind of absent as a parental figure in that. You know, my mom was also very similar. She used to call me Cinderella. Oh, Cinderella, you're cleaning up again, Cinderella. Oh, right. But my mom's a hoarder. So it was like this very passive aggressive thing that was, we used to kind of like laugh and giggle at, but it wasn't really nice, right? Does any girl really want to be that part of Cinderella? She's not talking about the princess part of Cinderella.
She's talking about the slave, yeah.
Right? The servant, the girl who's named Cinders because she falls asleep in a fireplace because she's so filthy. So, you know, kind of realizing, like, talking about how our parents didn't have any mental health. And look, I think I've come to a place where, like, I look at my mom's life, I look at my dad's life, I'm like, damn, they did a good job for what they had, what they knew and what was available to them. I mean, therapy in the 80s even was like, oh, if you can not drink for a month, you're not an alcoholic, which we all know is bullshit. But my dad still talks about that. Yeah, I could stop for 30 days, no problem, you know. So,
that's so funny.
Yeah, so I think therapy's come a long way, you know, psychology, and being open about what's there, but also going deep into things, like not just stopping with, like, oh, you put 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, but like, why? Unpacking that.
How? Yeah.
How is that affecting you? Why are you doing that? You know, what's behind that? What are you hiding from? Why can't you just be quiet and that's enough?
How can I help you?
Yeah.
It's so funny because I adore my dad. Like, my dad, I know that I think my dad can do no wrong, and like, that's wrong. Like, every adult does wrong, every person does wrong, but like, I think my dad is the bee's knees. And when I was in third grade, I had for the first time like anxiety. Like, I didn't know what was going on. My parents, we traveled for a month on the East Coast seeing family, and then I went to camp for the first time. And it's very common on the East Coast to go to camp for a month, or 2 months. But I was only 9, and we traveled for a month, and then they left me with my cousin at my aunt's house. And then me and my cousin, we went off to camp together for a whole month. And when I came home, I was like certain that I was gonna fail, that I wasn't gonna have graduated third grade, that I was going to be held back, and that I couldn't go sleep over at a friend's house. I would just randomly cry. And in school, I would just randomly start crying. Like, if my friend didn't show up, I would just like not be able to hold back the tears. Mom was like, that's where I got the saying of like, don't let them see you cry. You have to bite your cheek, because that started in third and fourth grade. And my dad, bite your cheek. Don't let them see you cry. Oh. But it was like, I felt very loved and very cared for. And I remember we had a back porch with a hammock, and laying on the hammock, and my dad is like, I was like, I'm really sad. I have a pit in my stomach, Dad. Like, I didn't know what that meant. I just had, and that's anxiety. I just had a pit in my stomach. And he goes, huh, why? And I go, I don't know. And I just started crying. And he goes, why are you crying? I go, I don't know why I'm crying. And he goes, you should know why you're crying, kiddo. End of conversation. And I think of my dad as like pure, just like support and kindness.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. Mine's so supportive. So supportive.
But like, he was like, weird.
He's like, what do you, I mean, my dad's similar. Like, my dad actually cries when he does. He's a very
too,
open,
actually, yeah,
open man and vulnerable in that way. But if I start to cry, even now, he's like, oh, okay, honey. Well, I hope you feel better. And then it's like, I can hear him on the other line being so uncomfortable. He just doesn't know what to do with it, right? So he's so uncomfortable. He's like, okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And he'll call and check in on me. But it's like, hang up. Like, did my dad just, I'm crying. Where are you, Dad? Like, gone. And he will call and check up the next day. Yeah. But like, he can't process it in the moment, you know, and be there for me, which, you know, it's very different from us now as parents when we're like, how are you feeling?
Yes.
But your gut thing, I had a similar thing in my throat. And that's why I danced. And when I started acting, I would get, every time I'd start to speak, it was like Mm-hmm. I was getting strangled. Mm-hmm. And so I would have a very quiet voice. And sometimes still that happens. Like if I'm speaking up, like speaking my mind, it was just, that's why I danced. It was easier for me to physicalize it, but I was so afraid to speak. But that was my anxiety. Like anytime I was going to be heard, I was scared to be heard. And
seeing these things in our kids, you do want to just like fix all of it and help and shield.
I was just telling you this week how I had my daughter who's turning 7 had this, like, we call them meltdowns, but it's really her struggling to go to camp this week. And I've did 3 different camps since we've come back from vacation, all like great camps, you know, California Science Center. This is a beach camp called Camp Awesome. Before that, I did do like a rec camp. And every time she's having like huge emotional breakdowns to get started with it. And this last one was so intense. I ended up crying for an hour and calling my friend who's an OT, like, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing something wrong. I can't help her. And it is the most horrible feeling when you don't know how to help your child and you know that they're struggling and it's also affecting your life and the life of the whole family to such a degree that you just want it to stop at the same time. I mean, my whole system after that, that's why I cried for an hour. Like I was so, my anxiety was up. I was so just... I'm shaking my hand right now. You can't see it, but my body just felt like vibration. And how do I stop this and slow down? I still don't know the answer, right? Like, I mean.
Well, because we are recreating how we behave and any dysfunction within ourselves, it's hard for us to see. And then it all of a sudden is like magnified in our children. Mm-hmm. I think so. Your friend said the thing of like slowing down and just one doing camp. One camp. And it's funny because I have almost guilt that I just do one camp because I am lazy. But it's not lazy, right? It's like it's easy. I'm overwhelmed by the thought of changing camps every week. Like I have to figure out the schedule, the drop off. Oh my god! But you're a doer.
And
I'm like, you maximize.
Oh, and this will be fun. Isn't it going to be fun? Bright, shiny, new, you know, and it was too much for her. And my son loves it. He's fine.
Yeah.
But for her, she needs more consistency. And my friend who is an OT, she said, just gave me some really great things. She was like, there's enough change in each camp. They change kids each week. They change activities. 1 week it's basketball. 1 week it's soccer. Right. 1 week it's swimming, whatever it is. So there are little changes and those are enough for your daughter at this time. Like she needs more containment, which is also what my therapist says. She needs more autonomy too. So like part of it's that I chose the camps because she doesn't know what the camps are. Right. And so I chose them for her. More to try out different things and
what you like.
I'm like, we're in LA. We should go to a beach camp because we never go to the beach and you should love the beach because you're in LA, you know. But now she's almost 7. She has some more autonomy, you know.
And it's interesting because at the camp that I send Lana to, they have a new theme every week. And we sit down at the beginning and we pick the themes. I let her choose what she wants to do. And listen, I have a point of view and I go, really? That's what you want to do? But I let her choose. And then sure enough, she changes her mind.
Yeah.
And it's happened twice. And I go onto the website and I'm like, everyone is filled. Like you can't change anymore. You can't like go into something else. But like she was able to like change into something that she wanted both times. And I think now that I look back on it, it was the ability for her to change her mind. It gave her a sense of control. I did not want to do it. And I'm constantly battling with myself of what's giving in, what's not setting boundaries, and what's being too strict and too controlling. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
I don't either. Yeah. I don't either. And that those questions come up for me all the time.
Bela, who you know, and she's like, like there's too much information for parents nowadays. Like, we just need to pick a path and be consistent on that, because then we're going to be secure in ourselves. It's this inner self-doubt that you and I are constantly like laying awake thinking about that is actually more detrimental to our kids if we just, according to Bela, if we just pick one, if we just pick one, if we pick one path, then we're going to be more confident parents. So you mess up, you say sorry, it didn't work out. Oops. But then your kid learned that that's not what they want to do. You know what I mean? And then you have like, well, we tried that. That's not going to work. It's an interesting point of view. And I actually do feel inundated with parenting techniques and information. Sleep training, you and I have very different ways of...
Still comes and sleeps in my bed at five.
Eric would walk out of the house if that was the case. And I have guilt. I feel like damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Because if you let them into your bed, I have a therapist in my mind telling me that you're giving into their anxiety and validating it, telling them that they need you all the time. And if you don't let them into your bed, then you're creating insecurity because, you know,
they don't have good attachment.
Right, right. They don't have good attachment. Exactly. So I'm like, I don't know. I picked something. I picked something. And we'll just see how they turn out when they're 25.
And I think that's the point, right? Like, we're trying the best we can. We're more conscious than any generation before us. We're still not going to do it right.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to do it as best as we can. And I think the good thing that we can say is when our kids come and complain, like just how I said in our podcast, where I think if my parents hear this, they'll be like, what? You said that about me? You know,
we won't tell them.
You know, well, yes. But I think, you know, we probably would be like, oh, you're right.
We would.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I was trying to go for this and it didn't really work out.
Yes. Yes. You know? Yes. I think so. And I think that makes all the difference.
I think so.
And I, if I recall, that was the conclusion of your piece. Because I tried to get the conclusion of your piece to be like, it's okay that I put 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. Remember that? And I tried to be like, you are being you and you are zestful and that's beautiful and wonderful. And you're like, Tamar, this feels really insincere and wrong. Like I'm lying to myself.
Yeah. I don't want to accept that. It's something I'm working hard to slow down. I need to slow down.
And so the conclusion was, I am like trying my best and I'm trying not to do that for my kids, but also I know that I'm doing an okay job. I am slowing down at times and I'm apologizing and I'm going forward with the best of intentions. And like,
yeah.
And what more can you ask for?
Yeah. Consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's really what it is. You know, I know we're almost like feeling of concluding and I know you want to slow down the podcast, but I do want to say one thing, which is, you know, like I do think the consciousness about it is so clear because what this year happened, even since our thing was, you know, what happens, that swirling, that chaos, like it almost feels like the chaos has one boundary. And then as it gets more and more chaotic, it kind of expands into this like ever universe of chaos around me. And it got so bad that Rob and I, both of us, because we're similar, were like, oh my God, everything's out of our control now. Mm. Like we have no control over our kids, our finances, our love life, our like everything was off. And so it's a great book, Miracle Morning. Have I told you about this book?
No.
Basically, it's like give yourself an hour morning routine. This is what I do at five o'clock.
Yeah.
And
I was like, no.
I was like, get up at 5 o'clock. Get up an hour earlier, everybody, on your busy schedule.
That's doing less.
It's doing less. But I'll tell you, it has made all the difference. Really? It is like my husband and I decided to do that together.
Yeah.
So we get up every morning, we meditate, we do journaling, we talk about our gratitude and we share that with each other. We do affirmations, we read our affirmations back and forth to each other. And we talk about our day and how to be like, we started out with health because our health was so off, my migraines, his, heart, some stuff with his heart. Mm. So like, you know, we just started to get, and I was like, let's focus on one thing. Let's focus on health. Cause once we're healthy, we can do everything else.
Yeah.
And then now we're starting to kind of move from that. Cause now we have like a little bit more connect like boundaries around that, and we know our schedule and we know what we're doing, and we can talk about dinner every night, what we're gonna have.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of moving in more towards business and a little bit of kids, you know.
That's so beautiful.
It's great. It is so connecting to us. It is also that routine of getting up. Like this morning, I was so tired. I got 5 hours of sleep. And I still got up and I slept for half of it. But the point is like I still showed up.
Yeah.
Even if I could only do a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's helping me to slow down, focus, and get clear, right? It's like my own boundaries around myself.
I love that. You know? Eric will never do that, but I absolutely, I love that. He would be like, why am I awake? I could be sleeping for another hour. That's really interesting. I could see it happening for me at like 8 a.m. Like, you know, after the kids go to school or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just that's the time that worked for us where our kids are still sleeping. And half the time, you know, they know now though, they still wake up. If we're not like a Hunter, especially if I'm not like in bed, he will wake up and be like, Mom. And so then half the time he comes out and he lays down next to us and he knows that that's still our time. And sometimes Charlie, if she wakes up, she will journal or read a book. And but they know that that's like
that's a really good habit for them to see.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we're all just we're doing our best, you know.
Yeah. And but I think going back to what the ending was
of your piece,
of the piece. I think it's not only like, what was the ending again? It was so good the way you said it.
No, it was that you are, you're trying your best not to pack that bag full. And if you do, you will apologize. You're trying your best not to pass that on. But you're, you know, you are a little bit and you're just going to apologize and work your way through it. Like you're just human basically was the ending.
Which I also think is such a great thing for our kids to see. Mm-hmm. Right. And rightfully so the morning routine, right? Like they see I'm a mess. Mm-hmm. That's my reality. And I'm trying to work towards changing that.
They also, I think your kids think that you're like an angel on this earth.
Okay. When they're 20, they'll be like, my mom was a mess.
But
she's human, right? She's like, she's trying to.
They'll be like, my mom's crazy, but she's an angel on this earth. Okay. All right. We have to wrap this up. I could talk to you for 10 hours. Okay. But I want to hear.
Okay. There's more.
There's the last thing. Is there a cute thing that is happening about your kids right now that you want to share, something they're saying or doing, or one thing that you would say to your younger self? Pre-kids or at the start of kids?
There's a lot to that. Cute things my kids are doing. Let's start there.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
Oh, it's one or the other. I could go on and on about cute things my son does. Mom, I need that candy bar to power up. good manipulation. Creative manipulation. I feel like I should say something really wonderful to my younger self. I think it's just that. I think that perfectionism is not achievable, that you are human, you are going to make mistakes, and it's what you learn from them, and not being hard on yourself when you have them.
Ugh.
You know,
the goal.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we tell that to our kids, but embodying that is really hard.
Oh, it's so true. Practice makes progress.
It's so true.
We're going to go straight into your story.
Okay.
It is absolutely beautiful. You deliver it wonderfully. And I'm just so thankful that you're in my life.
Oh,
thanks for
I love you.
Thanks for making this happen. Thanks for making me make this happen.
Oh, you're welcome. I really didn't do anything except say, yes, let's do it. And then you were like, really? Great. People are interested.
That's
and then
it.
You went 100 miles an hour. And
that's
it was
what
great.
I needed.
It's great.
I needed support. Yeah, all right.
You got it.
Thanks so
Always.
Much. All right. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Time. I struggle with my relationship with time. I view it often as my enemy. How do I be the mom I want to be, connect to my children, have the relationship I want with my husband, eat well, exercise, run a business, manage property, stay on top of finances, maintain friendships, volunteer? It feels impossible to get everything done and still have the energy to breathe, let alone find stillness, read a book, write a piece for a backyard performance. Ever since I was a little girl, I'd try to defy time, to stretch it, to make it work in my favor. My dad used to laugh, "You can stuff 10 pounds of shit into a 5-pound bag." I didn't fully understand what he meant. There was no further explanation. So as a naive, optimistic, small-town Pennsylvanian girl, I took it as a compliment, a sign I could make the impossible possible. I wanted to be a dancer, but the professional said I didn't have the right leg structure or the right feet. I used to think that's where my struggle with keeping time and balance began. I was too young to know that the instability might have come from something deeper, my dysfunctional family. My father, a brigadier general in the Army Reserves, a highly functioning alcoholic, an emotionally disconnected mother trying to hold the family together, protecting my older brother, Alex, from my father's anger. My father just couldn't relate to kids in general, much less a mischievous, energetic boy. I don't have many memories of the family together besides a lot of yelling. I remember Alex and I fearfully peeking around the kitchen cabinets into the living room, watching the yelling and wondering if my father was going to hit my mom before she got to the phone to call the cops. Luckily, he didn't. They separated that night. My 5-year-old me somehow understood it was for the best. I was the good kid, the pleaser, always trying to keep everyone happy, whether it was purposely losing at a game of memory to shield my 2.5-year-old older brother from feeling dumb, or comforting my mother when she overspent on her credit card buying us school clothes, or holding back my thoughts of disappointment with my dad. I was always happy. The happiest kid you know. And my mom's depression turned into hoarding magazines and beauty products with a constant inhale and exhale of her Capri cigarette smoke. I quietly organized the house and swept the piles of dog hair into the trash with a smile on my face as she joked of how I always loved the movie Cinderella. But I loved dancing. It became my refuge, an escape from childhood where support was scarce. Dance allowed me to express the words I was too scared to say, to find freedom in movement. I had talent. I was fluid, graceful, and rhythmic. I could tell stories with my body and spin effortlessly across the stage. But stillness was my Achilles heel. When asked to pause, hold an arabesque, or simply balance on one foot, I'd panic. My body would wobble. The fear of falling gripped me just as it does in life, as I feel like I'm always a moment away from unraveling. As a dancer, you're trained from the age of 3 to stand in front of a mirror and scrutinize your reflection, searching for imperfections. My knees were too knobby. My lines weren't long enough. My extensions not high enough. It's ingrained to you to constantly seek out and fix what is wrong. And even when those things improve, the flaws never fully disappear. So I just work harder. I had to prove my worth. I always found something else to fit in. I thought I was defying time. But I was just borrowing it from other places, stuffing my day and losing all sense of boundaries. In high school, I'd arrive early to practice with show choir before school. I was a straight-A student, second chair in the first violin section of the orchestra, and I took 3 AP classes during my junior-senior years. After school, I'd race to dance class for 1.5 hours, hitch a ride from a leaving parent to rhythmic gymnastics, where I competed on a national level, for another 3 hours. I'd do homework in the car during breaks before hitching another ride back to dance until 9:30 p.m. To help with costs, I taught younger students for partial scholarships at both the dance studio and the gymnastics school. For fundraising, I'd sell as much as the other 15 gymnasts combined. That's not a joke. On the weekends, I'd rehearse for performances like Nutcracker and babysit for a family of 5. This all at the age of 15. My life, 25 years later, isn't much difference in the sense of time. In fact, I figure out now how to fill 20 pounds of shit into that 5-pound bag. Now I try to get up at 5 a.m. to sometime connect to myself. I drive the kids to and fro school, and in between, I teach private Pilates and gyrotonic clients at a studio that I started during COVID with a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old. I clean the studio myself and manage the space for 5 under renters. I volunteers at this kid's school as a beautification chair. I manage 5 units on 2 rental properties. We are building 2 ADUs. I somehow create parties and then try to keep them small, but our last burst of the boundaries at 80. And while trying to, all this while trying to maintain a healthy marriage, eat well, and keep friendships alive, and deeply connect with my children. I don't feel like a dancer anymore. I am a tightrope walker on a unicycle, juggling flaming torches in one hand while twirling a plate on a stick in the other and balancing a bowl on my head, all above a pool of sharks. And that relentless spinning doesn't just stay on the outside. It works its way into my mind like a tornado, building until it finally explodes into a migraine. And then I'm out. If I'm lucky, the medications work, and it's just a morning. If not, it's a day or 3. And in those moments, I'm no longer a mother, but a shell of one. As a dancer, I learned early to stand in front of the mirror and dissect my flaws. My knees are too knobby. My extensions never high enough, and my lines lacked elegance. In my home life, I was labeled as unsupportive of my brother, having a lack of integrity for loving and connecting to my father, manipulative for having feelings. The list goes on. And as my dancing improved with hard work, the emotional imperfections lingered, lurking as those sharks, always ready to resurface, pull me under and devour me. But as long as I kept busy and never stopped to look down, I could keep moving forward. I'm terrified my kids are going to see this and mirror it. How can I teach them balance when I haven't found it myself? I've worked hard to silence those hard voices, replacing them with kinder ones. I'm determined to ensure that my kids don't carry the same relentless pursuit without boundaries. With the time I do have, I'm committed to help them clear their minds through listening to their feelings, expressing them without shame, and to stand strong, grounded, and confident on their own 2 feet. I manage small successes that feel like victories. It's hard to know if I'm doing enough, but if I can teach them, even in the stolen moments we do share, to be kind to themselves, then maybe I can give them a foundation that embraces balance over perfection. Take camping, for instance. While we for sure overpack, making sure we leave nothing unthought about, and it feels so stressful to get going. When we're out in nature, everything is simplified. I find time to slow down and be truly present with my kids, guiding them through life's challenges. There was one time 2 boys on a bike, 10 and 11 years old, stole money from my 4-year-old Hunter. They just grabbed it right out of his hand. He, being the small but scrappy child he is, chased those boys barefoot through the field of sprinklers trying to get his money back. Rob, my husband, found him just sitting on a rock, alone, sobbing, soaking wet, shivering with anger, fear, shock, just chilled to the bone. It was a great moment for parenting. I had to balance 2 truths for my son. What those boys did was wrong, but they were still good kids. This became clear when the boys with red eyes came to our camp and tearfully apologized after Rob helped them to realize how they'd hurt and taken advantage of a small child. My son, at first reluctant, allowed them to make amends. And then my 6-year-old daughter, Charlie, ran from the tent to give the boys a note. "Thank you for saying you're sorry. Smiley face heart." Their red eyes started to shine again brightly, as a child should, and a smile came across their faces at Charlie's olive branch. Everyone felt seen, and everyone was heard. I couldn't have asked for a more beautiful parenting moment. These moments of connection, of teaching compassion and strength, are where I find my own glimmers of balance. In these moments, I want to freeze time and relish in my children. And yet, I know I can't. And this fleeting time pulls me back to real life, where I sprint, cramming 20 pounds of life into a 5-pound bag. Sometimes I go to my kids' playdates, and I see all these families that seem to be successfully juggling it all. I mean, their houses aren't just clean. They're organized, styled, and designed. White fucking furniture and rugs. Seriously, how do they have white fucking furniture without a marker or crayon stain? What magic trick are they playing on me? Did they Houdini the slime phase entirely, or did they just have an invisible cloak for their messes? Most seem to work full-time jobs, more hours than I do. They work out, eat well, seem to have strong relationships with their spouses and children. Their finances are in check. They have college funds set up. They donate to charities, their schools, and volunteer as well in their local communities. So often I see this and I wonder, how, God, how the fuck are they doing this? And why am I failing? I feel like I'm failing all the time. And I'm so sick and exhausted of trying to do it all. Briar, my therapist, asked, is it really true? If you talk to those parents, would they say that they have it all together? I'm like, yeah, yeah, they do. They have it all together. And she gives me that look, like the one I give my son when he's clearly lying about hiding the candy under his pillow. I have to consider that maybe this perfect life I see is just my own fantasy I created. And when I try to live into that fantasy, I'm bound to fail because that fantasy itself is actually impossible. My dad was brilliant in his statement, 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. If only he had been aware enough to elaborate and dig deeper into his imagery, he could have helped me to see that this was all an illusion, that I couldn't bend time, that I was just borrowing it from other places. He could have seen that it was not just the physical I was packing into the bag, but the emotional garbage, the sense of shame and revulsion I was holding on to, cramming the wasteful, burdensome, smelly parts of my life and holding on to them without complaints, or even the ability to discern what was good to carry with me and what was real. And here I am, full of shit, constipated and not knowing how to excrete it. And the ability to carry this toxicity has become my sense of pride. So how do I relieve myself and let go of all this unnecessary shit so I can be present with my family, with myself, so I can be quiet, still, so I can breathe? Briar keeps telling me to aim for good enough. It sounds so simple, but for someone who's been trained to push beyond good enough, it feels almost impossible. And then I think about my children. They were better than good enough from the moment they came out, red-faced, screaming, shaking, covered in mucus and blood. They are perfect in my eyes. But perfection doesn't need to be flawless. If I could see myself as such, I have a chance. I'm a great mom, and I'm not perfect. And I can't create more time, but I can choose what's important and what I wish to hold on to, and I can be present. I can stumble, fall, and get back up, and in doing so, teach my kids to do the same. Because true balance, I realize, isn't about eliminating the bumps in life, but about learning to dance gracefully amid them.